unmute. Put your phone on mute so you don't have to hear me twice. Good evening. I hope everybody's well. I hope you all had a good week. As I normally start my class, I say the Anabakoa at the beginning of the class, and I'll read a verse from the Zohar. If you don't know the Anabakoa, just enjoy the meditation. If you don't recognize the song that I sing, that's because my voice is really horrible. And everybody has different songs that they sing with the Anabakoa. Anabakoa, Gedula Chemincha, Ta. The Gematria connects us to the phrase Ahavati Nam, and also to the name of God, Vav Shin Resh, which deals with recognizing patterns in our life where we've made the same mistake over and over. Kaber Rinat Amcha Sagvenu Saharenu No Ra. The six letters spell two Hebrew words, Kra Satan. Kra means tear up, Satan is the name of the negative force that gives us free will. The same six letters can spell two other Hebrew words, Sha'ar Katan, which means small gates, and reminds us to guard our gates, the eyes, ears, nose, and mouth, which are the entry points to the negative system. The letters of the month of Adar, the Kuf, that created the constellation Pisces, or Dagim in Hebrew, fishes, and the Gimel that created the planet Tzedek, the planet Jupiter. Na Gibor, Dor Sheyehudcha, Kevavat, Shamre. Nun Gimel Dalet Yud Kaf Shin. Nun Gimel Dalet connects us to the Hebrew word Zan, which means Parnasa, or sustenance. Yud Kaf Shin is a sequence that helps us take back the energy we've given to the negative system through our mistakes. Barchem Tacharem Rakame Sidkatcha Dami Gamlem. Betet Resh Saritach Gimel connects us to the Sefirah of Netzach and its attribute of eternal victory. Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adatach. Het Kuf Bet Het Nunayin. This sequence connects us to the Sefirah of Chod and its attribute of appreciation and thankfulness. Yachid Ge'e Lamcha Pene Zokre Kiddushatach Yud Gimelamed Hezayin Kuf. This sequence helps speed the spreading of the wisdom of Kabbalah during this, our generation. Shavatenu Kabel Ushma Tziakatenu Yodea Kalumot Shin Kufav Sadiyut Tav. The first two letters, Shin and Kuf, have a gematria of 400. 400 connects us to completion and perfection. The last four letters, like the first verse, connect us to the phrase Ahavati Nam, unconditional love, and the name of God, Vav Shin Resh. We learn from this that the path to completion, the path to perfection, is through the injection of unconditional love in each step of our process, and to also to recognize the patterns in our life where we've made the same mistake and change it. And the eighth verse I say is a whisper, but we will say it out loud for the purposes of teaching. Baruch Shem Kivod Malchuto Le'olam Ba'ed. Reading from the Zohar from the Parsha of Tzav, section 25, always of dust. And I don't plan to read the verses that just appear based on what my reading was for this week.
In order for a word in Hebrew
Kohei in the Bible, in the Torah. But there is a grammar rule that says, rather than say B'ha-re-shit, which is cumbersome, it's okay to say B'ha-re-shit. And so the vowel can change on the bet, whatever that means. But what the difference is, the word becomes in a beginning or in the beginning. Now, what is the difference? What is the difference to you? If I say in the beginning, or I say in a beginning, am I describing two different things?
I think so. I think that
beginning is the translation in the beginning. In a beginning implies that there's more than one.
Right.
And over the centuries, man has developed philosophies, developed attitudes, religions, and they deal with it in the same issue. Is there a beginning, or was God always there, or was even forgetting God, was this world always here? The question becomes, some over the centuries, the way it was dealt with is some people said, there is a creator, he created the sandbox called our world, and he left the sandbox to the children. And that's what you have when you leave child sandboxes to children, a little bit of chaos, or a lot of chaos. Other people have said, God is a micromanager. He is constantly interfering in the sandbox. He is making sure that everything happens. And he's the problem. All this chaos comes from him. And there are many other approaches, but essentially they fall between those extremes. We are going to talk about the beginning. And we're going to explain how the beginning brings us into our world today. But before we do that, I'm going to give, not that I'm an expert in science, but there are issues and developments in modern physics and modern science that need to be explained as part of this discussion. There are three physics theories that are in vogue today. One is the Big Bang, which I think you've all heard of. And it says that the creation, started with an explosion. And then there was an evolutionary process from that explosion into galaxies, universes, galaxies, suns, planets, people, life on Earth, life in other places in the universe that there must be, etc., etc. Another theory is called the string theory. And that says that the reason that I see you and you see me different than each other is because we are harmonizing at a different frequency of vibration. And what it is that vibrates is little strings. And everything is created based on little strings, smaller than atoms, and based on the vibration of those strings is how we perceive them. And therefore, I'm different than you, and you're different than everybody else in the room, and the table is different than other tables, and the atoms in the table are different than the atoms in the air, and so forth. The third theory that is going around is called the membrane theory. And it's described in a very sexual manner. And membrane theory says that there was an empty universe. And universes are separated from other universes by a membrane. And what happened is this universe that we live in was totally empty. And then it was penetrated and ejaculated something called energy into that space, and then that is the process that is ongoing, this evolutionary process, started with all of that energy that was ejaculated into this empty space. All three theories are consistent with what Kabbalah teaches and has been teaching since the beginning of time. Because we're going to be talking about a place and an essence that is beyond time. There is no time. There is no space. There is no effects. There is something that we cannot name. Maybe it's an entity. Maybe the word entity doesn't even apply to it. We cannot call it by name, because when we describe a name, we are limiting and defining the essence of what we are calling. My name is Hanoch. It's spelled Chet Nun Vav Kaf Sofi, four Hebrew letters. The first two letters spell the name Chen, or the word Chen, which means grace. The last two letters spell, have a gematria of 26, which is the same gematria as the name of God dealing with mercy, the Tetragrammaton. The root of the name Hanoch comes from the word meaning education or dedication. The same root from the holiday of Hanukkah, which is rededicating the temple. So my name has to do with teaching and with dedication, but it also has this concept of grace within it. Now, what is grace? We could spend hours, as many philosophers have done. The grace of God, and they speak of it all the time. Yes.
I understand it as gift for nothing.
Okay. Let me give it to you in a better, clearly defined Kabbalistic sense. And this is the difference between Kabbalah and philosophy. Kabbalah says there is a Hebrew technique, grammar technique, that you take the first letter of each word of a phrase and make another word. We have a term for it in English, I forget what it's called. It'll come to me another day. But the word grace is the phrase Chokhma Nestar. Chokhma means wisdom, Nestar means concealed. Grace is concealed wisdom. It's the essence of concealed wisdom. Something for nothing is also valid, but one is much more exact, and that's the difference. My job in this world, as I discovered by evaluating my name, is to teach the hidden wisdom of the Creator, of the Tetragrammaton. Every person has a name, and every person has this information. But when we talk about the beginning, Rabbi Ashlag teaches us that you're wasting your time trying to understand that essence, that entity. The most that you can discuss about him is to say he is God, or she is God, or it is God. But when I say God and you say God, we're talking about two different things. And there is no way you can define God, because you limit God when you do so. And since you can't define it, you can't explain it to me. Nor can I explain God to you. Rabbi Ashlag is saying, don't even try. Don't waste your time. What he says is that this God had a thought. Because everything starts with a thought, we can say that God had a thought. The thought was to be revealed. It's not a desire to be revealed. And what does it mean to be revealed? To be sensed by something else. That's revelation. the thought to be revealed created an extension of God that we call the Creator. The Creator is not God. It's an extension of God. It's an attribute of God. God is a creator, but much more than that. The Creator is an extension of that entity, that God. When the thought to be revealed came into existence, the extension came into existence. Cause and effect. Not time, like I picked up the phone, I moved it over here, and that's a time. It came into place. The thought to be revealed caused the Creator to be created. The Creator, whose job it is to reveal, created a vessel, something that would sense what wanted to be revealed, what needed to be revealed, because there's no desire in the Creator. It's not even, we can't even describe it. Thought to be revealed, created the Creator. The Creator created a vessel so that it could show what needs to be revealed. The vessel and the Creator are two different things. The Kabbalists call the Creator light. And the reason they call it light is if I take a candle and I light another candle, have I diminished the first candle? It's the same light. There's no loss. Do I have more light than I had before? Yes, I have two candles, not one. Now, if I do that a million times, have I ever diminished any of the light, any of the candles? Do I have more light? This is the essence of the Creator. It shares itself without diminishing itself. The vessel is where that light is revealed. So another word for light is fulfillment. Now what's fulfillment? You have a desire, it gets fulfilled. I want a new car, I buy it. I want to be happy, I decide to be happy. That makes me happy. What's fulfillment? And what is desire? Because they are two opposite things. And in the spiritual world, opposites do not attract. They repel. A vessel that is receiving is not sharing. The light that is sharing is not receiving. There should not be any affinity in this creation, this condition. And yet we are taught by the Kabbalists that this place called the endless world is in unity. Sharing and receiving is in unity. It shouldn't be. It's not understandable by a human being. But this is a paradox we cannot explain. But this endless vessel, this endless world exists. It continues to exist. And it existed, has continued to exist for aeons. The vessel has a desire, the light fulfills it. The vessel has another desire. The vessel doesn't even know that it had a desire, and it's fulfilled before it knows that it has a desire. Because the job of the Creator is to fulfill. This went on for ages until the vessel developed something called Red of Shame. Rite of shame is not an easy concept to understand, and yet it is. Rite of shame says, the metaphorical explanation, if I take you all out to dinner tonight, and we have an absolutely beautiful conversation, beautiful meal, all of our, you know, we just come home fully happy, fulfilled with, you know, all of the particulars. And as we finish the meal, we say, let's do it again tomorrow. This was really special. And we all agree. I pick up the check, and we all walk out. The next night, the dinner, the music, the conversation, everything is wonderful. So let's do it again tomorrow. And everybody says, great. This is really wonderful. I pick up the check, and we all walk out. 30 years later, every night, we have done the same thing. Conversation is always stimulating, always new. The music is always new creations. Everything about every instant of the dinner is wonderful. What's not wonderful about the dinner? Not even that. No, it's never the same because it's always fulfilling to me. What's not the same is that at some point, one of you, if not all of you, are going to say, I'd like to reciprocate. Let me pick up the check tonight. Why would you say that? And we do that all the time in our society. Our world is based on this understanding. Why do we say that? Why don't we just accept somebody else paying the check? Because our... Yes? And that's why it's called bread of shame. It's very good. Bread of shame means the more that I eat, the more that I receive, the worse I feel. The more shame I'm absorbing. And where does it come from? It comes from a simple statement. There's no free lunch. If I don't earn the light, I don't want it. And that's what the vessel said to the Creator, to the light, in the endless world. It said, enough. I do not want to receive any more from you if I cannot earn it. I want to earn what I'm receiving. The more you feed me, the more you give me, the more you share with me, I feel worse and worse and worse to the point that I would rather die than receive anything. And I know I'm telling you to stop giving me. Stop sharing with me, and that means I will die. But I know that's what I want. The Creator's job is to create, to share. Here's a desire. I don't want. That's like the immovable object meeting the all-powerful force. What happens? Can't be moved, the force can't move it. If it can't, if it's all powerful, it should be able to move it. So the Creator, being the Creator, says, this is a desire, I have to fulfill it. How can I fulfill it? There's only one vessel, and I don't need anything, so he can't share with me. So I have to create an illusion. So here's my plan, vessel. I'm going to take the infinite power of energy, light, and I'm going to transform it step by step by step into a finite form of physicality. And as I do that, you going to separate into the illusion of different parts. Do I have five fingers? Or do I have one hand? Which is it? No, it's one or the other. It can't be both. If you look at five fingers, you do not see one hand. Your brain can only function, only absorb the perception of one thing at a time. We can do it quickly enough so sometimes it looks like we're looking at two things at the same time. But truthfully, it's either five fingers or it's one hand. And I can go back and forth between those perceptions. That's the purpose of the physical world, to be an illusion, to confuse you. Why? Because when you make a decision where you do not know the consequences, and that decision turns out to be right, you earn the life, and you get to keep that fulfillment. You make a decision where you don't know the consequence, and it turns out to be wrong, there's a consequence. And in that consequence, you earn the life, the fulfillment in the future. This is our physical world. We don't see what the consequences are of our decision. Cause and effect. The light went to the vessel, said, "Here's my plan." The vessel said, "Wonderful. I like this plan. Sign me up right now." And there was this big bang of the immovable object being met by the all-powerful force, and the process created step by step, sephirah by sephirah, down to the physical world. And then it proceeded through evolutionary process of stars becoming, or galaxies becoming stars, stars becoming planets, all through the process. This is our physical world. We are here to remove bread of shame in the endless world. The endless world still exists. It never changed. There is never a change in the endless world, which is somewhat of a paradox, because if there was never a change for eons, and then the vessel said, enough, and then the vessel bought into this plan, and we're living in this period of now we have time, and we remove bread of shame in the endless world, but there's no change in the endless world. How do we understand this? And that's because bread of shame is an illusion. It's a feeling. It's an emotion. But it's very real to us. When we remove bread of shame in the endless world, we can only really remove it in this world. It's a paradox. And we don't really understand it. But we're starting to. We're working at it. We'll be taking a look at this process. Now, the plan called for 7,000 years of time to be in this world. The last 1,000 years we call Shabbat, and it has a different essence than the first 6,000. Just like the weekdays have a different essence than the Shabbat. And if you have never kept Shabbat or touched on it, there's a class about Shabbat in the course. I highly recommend you try it. But irrespective of that, we have 6,000 years to remove bread of shame. We are in the year 5771, so there's only 229 more years to go. Now, what happens? What's the process? And it's clearly defined in the Book of Prophets and in the writings like the Psalms. two paths to this end point of the 6,000 year. Those two paths, one is the lion will lie down with the lamb. It's one of peace and serenity, natural process, no pain, no suffering. People will grow. They will learn to love. They will become inclusive. There will be no separation anymore. The other path is not very pleasant. We call it Armageddon. We call it Gog and Magog, the war of Gog and Magog. You've heard the prophecies. Actually, most of you haven't heard the prophecies because very few people read the prophets. I suggest you do because that's quite frightening. I don't need to expand on it other than to say nobody wants to. But nobody wants to give it up either. Because our egos, what separates us from the Creator, what makes me think that I'm me and you're you, doesn't want to hear peace and serenity unless I'm in power. I'm in control. I'm the important one. We can have peace as long as you listen to me. Doesn't work that way. And that's what has been going on for 6,000 years, 5,771 years. Some of the vessel has achieved their correction. They've removed all of their share of bread of shame, and they wait for the rest of us to complete our share of bread of shame. What does that mean? We each have part of the bread of shame to remove. I can remove my bread of shame. I cannot remove your bread of shame. You can remove your bread of shame, but you cannot remove my bread of shame. Therefore, you are much higher than I, much more important in the scheme of the world and universes than I am. I'm a little pipsqueak. I'm nothing. Because I can't do your work. I have to make sure you do your work, but I can't do your work. You're important. And at the same time, you can't do my work. So I must be truly important. Again, there's a paradox there, but it's more easily understood. If I can't do your work, then you are more important than I. And if you can't do my work, I am more important than you. And therefore, neither one really matters. Now, let's understand what we're talking about. What is a correction? There's a tennis court. It's one of those tennis courts that have a door on one side, but not on the other side. And it's in a park, and there's a walkway walking by the tennis court. And there's two people playing tennis, and there's somebody walking by who's late for a business appointment. He has a $10 million sale waiting on this business appointment that he's going to be late for. So he doesn't feel really good. And he's carrying 16 things in his arms. But he's walking as fast as he can. He's running as fast as he can to get to the appointment as soon as he can. And the people in the tennis court hit the ball over the net. And it lands 4 feet off of the pathway. Just as he walks by, runs by. And they yell, "Please, throw the ball." If you understand that the $10 million business deal depends on you throwing the ball back, it's a no-brainer. But how many of us understand that? Okay. what goes around comes around, and, or, what comes around is chaos. If you ran by the ball because the deal was important to you and you were thinking about your selfishness, not thinking and not calling it selfishness, but just, I'm an important person, I'm running, I've got to get there on time, I don't have the time. I'll come back and do it later. I'll do it another time. I'll give you the $100,000 to build a new tennis court with a gate in it. But right now, I'm not going to stop. No bread or shame was removed. But there is a consequence. You'll get to have that situation again. Another lifetime. 20 years down the road in this lifetime, you'll be running, you'll be late, you'll have an important deal, somebody will stop you and say, can you tell me the time with a stutter? It takes 20 minutes to get out, please tell me the time. Will you have the patience though? Are you 20 years older? You have more life experience. You tend to be more sharing. But do you have patience for the cripple, for the person with the stutter, etc., etc.? Each time the universe says, I really don't care what you decided. If you decided to do the sharing action to remove bread of shame, wonderful. And if you didn't, we're going to give you another chance until you get it right. Until you run out of those 7,000, 6,000 years. That's why we are here. There's effort in understanding what our individual correction is. That removes bread or shame. In discovering it, in doing the action of whatever it is, there's removal of bread or shame. This is why the physical world exists, what its purpose is, and why you exist in this world. You are here to learn how to remove bread of shame. That's what the tools of Kabbalah will teach you. Very exactly, but never so exactly that it will say to you, next Tuesday at 3 p.m. you're going to be running by the path and the ball is going to in front of you. There's a story told about a rabbi. Actually, he was a shofet. He was a butcher. And he had a dream. His father came to him and said, Friday, just before Shabbat, there's going to be a very poor widow come to you and ask you if the chicken is kosher. Make sure you decide and take the time and make it, do the work. This is your job in this world. He was giving them the information in a dream. Well, that was Sunday, so Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. He's ready for this woman to come Friday. Guess what happened? The woman didn't come that Friday. Next week. Where's the woman? Didn't come again. 5 years later, forgot it. 20 years later, forgot it. 40 years later, the woman shows up, and he has totally forgotten about the dream. The woman comes, is this chicken kosher? Now, the issue for him, whether the chicken is kosher or not kosher, does he feel her pain? The fact that she can't afford to feed her family if the chicken isn't kosher. She bought it. If it's not kosher, she has to throw it away. And her family's going to go hungry on Shabbat. It's a horrible experience. And he has to feel that pain and find a way to make the chicken kosher. Slaughter another chicken. Whatever he has to do. appreciate your problem. Shabbos is almost here. I'm late for prayers. Have a wonderful Shabbos. Shabbat Shalom. And he goes off down the path. And he does his mikveh, and he prepares for Shabbat, and he does his prayers, and he goes home, and he has his beautiful family, and the table is set. And during Kiddush, he falls asleep. And he dreams his father came to us. You blew it. You totally blew it. He wakes up. Oh, my God. My whole life has been wasted. I came here to make sure that woman had chicken on Shabbat, and I didn't do my work. And he admonished his children. They ran through the town looking for this woman to get her and her children to their Shabbos meal. They couldn't find her, of course. But he made his children promise to find her and take care of her from that point on. And that night he died, because there's no reason to live, to be in this world, unless you're going to do your work. And his work was to take care of this woman, and it didn't happen. Time to leave. But his children did the work. Now, I told you, I can't do your work. You can't do my work. His children cannot do his work. We come with two aspects of removing bread of shame. One based on just what we can do, as I've said, and one based on where you were in Adam and Eve. What part of their body? Because there was an action that they did that was wrong. That was a mistake that has to be corrected. So if you were part of the legs of Adam and Eve, you walked up to the tree. That's a different correction than the mouth who chewed it. It's a different correction than the arm that reached for the fruit. It's a different correction than the stomach who digested it. Many people come from the stomach of Adam, or the leg of Adam, or the ear of Adam. Each of those souls can assist each other in their correction. But just that aspect. They always have something that no one else can do. This is why we're in this world. The tools of Kabbalah over the next 18 weeks, you'll have all the tools you need to know how to do your correction, how to remove bread of shame, how to remove chaos from your life. Because the rules are very simple. You have an opportunity to do your correction, you don't do it, you have chaos. That's the consequence. Removing bread of shame, removing chaos. They're consistent. Does anybody have any questions? Please. Let's assume you haven't heard of bread of shame before tonight. I know you have, but let's assume you haven't. You have your life ahead of you. You have actions to do, whatever they may be. Which ones are the actions that are removing bread of shame, and which are the ones that aren't? Which ones you do because you're in this world to receive the pleasure of this world? Because that's part of removing bread of shame. You get rewarded when you remove it. So part of that reward is the pleasure of this world. You buy a new car. It comes with new car smell. We all know what new car smell is, right? Or at least we've heard of it. New car smell is a wonderful thing. A week later, do you still have new car smell? You bought it. You earned it. You wouldn't have it if it wasn't yours. Why don't you have new car smell 3 months later? Because every day you have to earn the fulfillment. And the day you stop earning that fulfillment of new car smell, it goes away. Some people it'll be 6 months long. Other people it'll be a half hour. Everybody is relative to each other. You came here to do two things, but you also came here to experience the pleasure of this physical world. So we cannot know what action might be my tikkun. If we knew it, we don't remove bread of shame, because there's no effort. Just as the man had been told, Friday, take care of the woman. And he's waiting Friday. But nobody told him it was 70 years later. He forgot it. Who can remember a dream from 70 years ago? I can't remember a dream from yesterday. You're going to be given the information to do your correction, but it will never be made so easy that there's no bread of shame removed. Did that answer your question? Any other questions?
Remove bread of shame from these glasses. You have more than one opportunity in a lifetime. Today I'm hearing that you only have one.
No.
But then it depends also on your experience.
No. You are presented, you are moved to a place where there's an opportunity to remove bread of shame. You do it, doesn't mean that all of your bread of shame has been removed, but you've done a portion of it. You move on with life. You're still removing bread of shame. Maybe you're correcting the mistakes you made in last life that veiled your ability to get to your bread of shame, your original bread of shame. Now comes along and you cleansed everything in your life except this one bread of shame issue. You're given that opportunity. He did not take care of the woman. He did not do it. He will have another chance. When? In his next lifetime. Or his children did it because it was one of those items that was a group bread of shame issue. But every time you are presented with a decision and you do not make the decision correctly, you're going to be given another chance. But the next time, it's going to be slightly more difficult.
Do you know how many bread of shame issues we are have?
You share a bread of shame issue with everybody born in the same Hebrew month that you were born in. You share a bread of shame issue with everyone who was born on the same day of the week. You share a bread of shame issue with everybody born on the same day of the month, the same year that you are born. I can go on and on. All of the relationships that you have bread of shame with. All of the, obviously you have a stronger connection to somebody that you marry or than a child that comes to your life than with somebody when you're driving down the street. But as we spoke about last week, when you drive down the street, you're exchanging energy, you're making correction with that person. You walk into an elevator and five other people walk into that elevator and you go up to the sixth floor, floor by floor, you're exchanging energy with those five people. The universe doesn't waste itself. The only reason those people are in that elevator is for you to exchange with them. Did you? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't. But if you didn't, those people are going to find themselves in an elevator 20 years later or next lifetime. But the way to get to the elevator is going to be made a little bit harder. Is it clear? Yes.
Let us say that for what you want, you want to be a spread of shame, and then that's a self-help does our connection with Creator become closer as we correct this correction with the threat of shame?
There are people who are born with psychic abilities. It's an indication. Number one, they're given those abilities as part of the tools that they have to make their bread of shame. But it's also an indication of being closer to the Creator. One of the things we will talk about in the advanced class is how to achieve psychic abilities and how to utilize those as part knowing what your correction is. Being connected to your intuition is a very important part of knowing what is the correct action to do. Yes, removing some of your bread of shame brings you closer to the Creator. But again, this is a world of illusion. You may think I did my correction, and I'm feeling closer to the Creator. I can tell you many times I've gone to synagogue and had people tell me how wonderful, how amazing this experience was. One of my teachers is named Rabbi Berg. Some of you have heard of the name or know of him. Rabbi Berg was with his teacher in Israel, and this was in the late 50s, early 60s. To get to Israel at that time was not an easy trip, so you went for months. You basically went for a minimum of a month, 6 weeks. He had a Shabbat with his teacher. Went up to his teacher after Shabbat. What an amazing Shabbat. He'd been in Shabbat his whole life. By the time he was 2 years old, he was keeping Shabbat. What an amazing experience. His teacher said, I didn't realize how little your vessel is. If you feel how wonderful, maybe the light was overwhelming for the vessel. When I first started to study Kabbalah, I lived 40 miles away from the Kabbalah Center where I was attending synagogue. I went, heard the Torah Saturday morning, had amazing experiences Friday night, Saturday, went home Saturday afternoon and crashed. Got home about 2 o'clock, fell asleep, woke up Sunday morning sometimes 2 in the morning, sometimes 8 at night. Just overwhelming until I had built my vessel to be able to handle the closeness, to be able to handle the energy. It's all a process, and what we feel is close can be very distant. What we feel is distant can be when we're close. You may have heard the story about the man who went to heaven, and when you go to heaven, you're life is run as a movie before you. And the man said, I got to talk to God. He goes to God and he says, God, I saw the movie. Whenever I had troubles, there's only one set of footsteps. Whenever things are fine, there's two. Where were you, God, when thought life was tough? What is God's answer? Those are my footsteps. I'm carrying you when life is tough. There's only one set of footprints. But when do we feel distant from God? When there's chaos in our life. That's when he's carrying us. Well, that's when we're closer. But we live in the world of illusion. We don't know this. But your intuition does. And that's what the tools of Kabbalah will help you reconnect with. Because this is a society that for the last 1,000 years has taught people use logic, forget intuition, prove it to me, then it must be right. And as I said in my first class, and I will say in most of my classes, never believe a word I say. Because what I say is my experience, and the reason that I teach and what I teach is for you to have your own experience of the Creator. whether that is reading a verse from the Torah or a psychic ability. What is your desire or your personal experience to the Creator? And that's what the tools will give you. Any other questions? We'll see you next week. As long as there is one person who arrives here, there will be a class. This is my commitment.